just the confidence it gives you to enter in with a force. You know, they really, like Caitlin was saying, our professors want you to do well, and they really just want to see you thrive and help you out.
Hola, amigos, and welcome to the Add to Houston Amigos podcast, a podcast for young professionals in the marketing and advertising industry who are learning to navigate their early careers. I am Guido Falcone, your host today. I am joined today by my co-host,
Alexander Halu, current president of Add to Houston.
And as always, our producer, Jacob D'Antone. Hello from across the room. Today on the show, we have three very special guests. In no particular order, they are Mike Devlin, professor at Texas State University, and the NSAC
advisor
for the school, Cooper Murphy, programs chair for Add to Houston, and also a former NSAC team member. He was the art director. And Caitlin Turner, a marketing manager with HP, and also an NSAC alumni. Thank you so much, all three of you guys, for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, we talked about this in the podcast before, but Alex is also a former NSAC participant from a few years ago. So today, as you might have guessed, the topic is NSAC, the National Student Advertising Competition. This is a very prestigious competition that AAF does every year. Unfortunately, I was never able to participate in it, but I have a room full of guests who did. So if you guys could take a second and talk a little bit about what NSAC is, you know, and how students, you know, participate.
I'll go ahead and take that. So the National Student Advertising Competition is sponsored by the AAF, or the American Advertising Federation. It's the largest and one of the most prestigious student advertising competitions in the country. Each year, we get a national client, and all schools participate, and they work from the same brief, and they work for the same client. And about 100 schools each year participate. And then the way it breaks down, for those of you who aren't familiar with it, we're all broken our districts. Obviously, we represent District 10, which is the largest district in the country as well. That includes schools from Texas, Oklahoma, and Louisiana. And each school competes against one another within their district. There, if you win first in your district, you advance to a semifinal where all district winners, and there's 12 or is it 14? I forget. It's changed. Some of them are mega districts, so they have two teams that go up. So, you know, anywhere from 14 to 16 teams, then have their materials looked at by a new set of judges. And then from there, the top eight advance to nationals, where they'll get to compete against one another with a new set of judges for the client. Typically, the judges at that point are all client judges. And, you know, so they announce the winner. So it's a great process. It's a long process, though. We usually start in December, and, you know, if you advance, you can end up going all the way till June. So it's a long and involved process for these guys.
Yeah, that definitely sounds like it, but that sounds like a very good opportunity for any students.
Yes, especially when you're an up-and-coming advertising professional trying to make your way and your impact into the industry. We typically don't know where to start, and NSAC really acts as that gateway or that bridge for up-and-coming advertising professionals to really leave their mark, or at least get a taste of what's it all about. So in this year, obviously, well, I was there in St. Louis to see your presentation, and I'm sure our viewers here would love to learn a little bit more about the client that you guys had the privilege to create the campaign for, and a little bit more about the direction you guys took on it. So either Caitlin, Cooper, if you guys maybe want to give a brief about that, that would be fantastic.
So I served as our executive creative director this year, and our client was Indeed. So they are a job search website where people can go and search for jobs, and they're all there in one pool. And our target was Gen Z, people who are ready to look for jobs. It was interesting because a lot of us were also in that target, but that also helped us with really having that gut feeling and being able to explore our research, not only through a secondhand approach, but also firsthand. So one of the biggest things that our strategy team uncovered was this root idea of fear and the job search feeling scary. It's the fear of the unknown. We wanted to explore that, but we knew that we needed to resonate with Gen Z. And Gen Z, more than any other generation, is really good at avoiding advertising. They're oftentimes not excited about it unless it doesn't feel like advertising. So we took it a really absurd twist, and we went back to some childhood roots of creating fun characters. We had these little creatures called scamps, which represent fear when you don't know what it is. And then you see it, and it's a fun little puppet.
It was exciting to use the scamp just because a lot of times, like Caitlin said, we all have these irrational fears around the job search. You know, we're not sure what to expect or what we're going into. And that was what a lot of us faced when we were approached with this client. But once we came up with this root idea of having these shadow, mysterious figures, deeply just being these puppet-type figures, it helped us, in a way, boil it down and make it easy. And once we started going with that, our minds were just racing with all sorts of ideas that we could take these puppets.
Well, and I will, just to add to that, you know, what I, as the advisor, you know, I've seen a lot of teams come through and they'll present to their creatives, the team, and, you know, there'll be a little pushback or a little buy-in right away. I will say this was a unique time because when they first came up and pitched, we're going to do these puppets, I, along with most of the other people on the team, all rolled our eyes and were like, we're not doing puppets, guys. Like, this is not going to work. And we told them to go back and keep working on it. And to much of the, you know, just to show that when you have a really good creative idea and you believe in it, you know, how much are you willing to fight for it, but also refine it? And, you know, what they did is they went back and they refined it again, and they started giving these puppets personality and really tied them back to the brand, like in a strategic way. So they weren't just spokespeople, but they were, by proxy, arms of the brand that you kind of got to personify. And they came back again and they pitched, we're going to do these puppets. And I was like, guys, we're not doing puppets. Like, you got to be kidding me. And then they showed everyone and we looked and we're like, oh, you know what? This might work. And so, you know, I think it wasn't just puppets. I think you guys are selling yourself short a little bit. It was, you know, it was really spokespeople that had a fun, and there's a lot of ways that they could bend these. And, you know, I saw some of the other teams, you know, they also used characters and to try to communicate. But again, the key here was these puppets had such a vibrant personality. You could tell they really dug into who these puppets were. So they weren't, they felt authentic and it felt enjoyable to watch. So it was a good experience watching them grow on that whole creative front that they got.
Yeah, and those literal personifications that were amplified through those characters really made a great impression. You know, with each persona of the scamps, you had illuminating shadows, kind of creating like a monstrous figure, displaying this irrational fear that these students had before they were introduced to all the benefits of Indeed. And that particular component in your campaign really stood out a lot, and it really created a great dynamic impression on young professionals, especially the students that were there. I remember when I was at the room listening to the presentation of the team with Caitlin being on stage as well, a lot of people were laughing at some of the ads with, if I recall, Cooper, you were one of the voices of the characters. Is that right?
Caitlin and I both were, actually.
Oh, yeah. Right.
I got the opportunity to voice our cranky old man, Frank. he had a little bit of a little rasp to his voice. He was a little rough, but, you know, he wanted to find human insight in job hunting. And Caitlin.
Yeah. Whitney was our it girl. She's the one that pour hard seltzers deep in the bathroom, and she is ready to hype you up when you are not feeling your best self.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's so fun. I think it's awesome that you guys get to kind of do some, you know, obviously this isn't like a real, it's a campaign, but like it doesn't go live, right? But you get to understand what the process is of developing the campaign, figuring out what the message is going to be and all of that before you even get to the professional world, right? Which is not something that you usually get.
You know, for someone who's young, maybe a few years into the industry, you know, how can they work towards moving up, right? How can they work towards getting promoted, moving up in the ranks, so to speak?
Something I've noticed, I am part of like our hiring team, so I get to interview different people from different positions. Oh. And at our company, we like to like have you interview with different roles that you're going to actually work with. So if we're, for example, hiring for the analytics team, you will meet with someone from the client service team. You'll meet with someone from maybe our SEO or inbound team. Like, you'll meet with different people, and that's really for you to get insight on, like, how do I work with said people? Or, what type of collaboration will I be doing? Which I think is really helpful. But the number one thing that I'm always looking for is when people are answering questions, and I think this goes into when you're looking to get a role, but also when you're working within your role, how are you taking initiative, right? So I might ask you a question about a client problem, or you might be currently working within your role and you have a client problem. Are you waiting for your manager to sit there and tell you what to do? Or are you really prepping through and walking through scenarios in ways that you think you can tackle it? I think one of the biggest things that's really helped me be successful in my career is I've always taken this philosophy of, if I'm going to ask my boss for help, I'm not going to go in there without some type of plan in my head. So I might tell my boss, like, hey, I have this client. They're really upset. They want a, $7,000 credit. And I'm like, here's the situation that happened. Here's what I think we should do. Right. So I'm not just going to my boss and being like, so what do I do? Like, do I just give it to them? Like, what can you do it? Can I, like, I'm not really just looking for them to lean in, but I'm going, here's what I think. I kind of sat down with this. I thought about it. I remember, my coworker went through this 2 months ago with this client. I took the initiative to go ask other people who've been through this scenario. And then I've come back to my manager with, here's what I think could work. And I've noticed that as I've done that, what it's done for my management team is they now have a new level of trust with me. Of, okay, Erica's not just going to come to me with a problem, but she's going to tell me, like, I have this roadblock. Here's the roadblock. Here's what I think I need to unblock the road. And then what I'm looking for my manager to do is, because typically the people that are managing you have more experience than you, right? Sometimes it's not about, like, age difference. Like, for example, the person that I work with that's on my team, her and I are literally the same age. I think we're, like, 7 months apart. But have, like, 6 additional years of work experience within the industry than she does.
Yeah.
And so, that adds to our dynamic, right? It's not that I don't trust her to handle problems. She's the same age as me. She's not dumb. She's smart. Like, I know that. Mm. We're born the same year. 93 babies are smart. We're good, right? At the same time, I'm like, you might not know how to handle this. Yes, 93. Gotta make sure everybody knows. But at the same time, she might not have had enough experience going through some of the problems that I have or some of the successes that I have. So what she's looking for me is this the right way to handle it based off of your experience, right? Less of her coming to me being like, I don't know what to do. I haven't thought about it. But I really do think that, like, if you're looking to move up, one of the biggest things that a lot of managers are looking for is, am I handholding you through every scenario, even duplicate scenarios? So, did you credit a client last month for $7,000 and now a different client is asking you for a $2,000 credit? Are you coming back to me being like, what do I do? Or did you learn from what we talked about in the last time we had this conversation, right? And are you taking that initiative to say, hey, I looked at this, I walked through it, et cetera. And an initiative stems into a lot of things. If your boss is like, hey, I want you to start on this project and you decide not to start because you never got instructions. I'll give you an example. I know Google Analytics a little bit better than maybe some of my coworkers based off my previous position. And so a lot of the times I'm like, maybe you don't know it. Maybe you want to know it because you have a client who's going to be heavily in Google Analytics. Are you taking the initiative to do some training, take some training courses, watch some YouTube videos in your downtime, right? Like, are you taking that initiative to train yourself up or to learn about something or to go and ask someone questions about something so that when you are put in that scenario and in that situation, I don't have to worry about, like, hey, how much do you know? I can, you can answer that question confidently with, oh yeah, actually I took some training courses because I wasn't familiar. And that's okay to say. Like, right. I feel like people are afraid to say they're not good at something. It's okay to say you're not good at something. But it's better if you can say you're not good at something, but I've been learning about it and I've been taking a training class or I've been reading about it. Or, I actually put 30 minutes on the calendar with Jacob and with Guido so that I can learn about podcasting because I had no idea what I was going to do. Oh, awesome. So did you talk to them? How'd that go? Are you good? Right. And then your manager's like, dang, they took initiative, have a conversation and to get that experience. Like, that's fantastic. And it just builds you up from a credibility perspective. But then for yourself, now you're ahead of the curve. Maybe all your coworkers don't know about podcasting in the way that you do. And now guess what? When they want to learn about podcasting, who are they going to call? They're going to call you because they just heard you talk about how you gained the six. Hey, hey, what training class did you take? Hey, did you, was that meeting with them, you know, good? Can you tell me what you learned? Right. And now you become a point person. I think a lot of people underestimate that value. Now, at the same time, if you are looking to move up because you're just looking to make more money and you're not trying to be a manager, I would just tote that line a little carefully. Because as a manager, I feel like sometimes I'm looking at people who are taking initiative. I'm like, oh my God, would you, do you want to learn how to manage people? And sometimes people are like, no, nah, I'm good. I do not want to be a manager. I like, I want your salary as a manager, but I do not want to manage people. And that's okay, right? That's totally fine. Like, be honest. If you do not want to manage people, do not be that person that like raises your hand to do it and then dread what you do every day. That sounds horrible.
Yeah.
Like, just be transparent. Absolutely. And a lot of the times there's different ways that they can, you know, they can make you a senior blah, 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 blah. And when they introduce you on calls, I know in my last role before I worked at Medium Giant, you know, I would get introduced on some calls or I would get put on certain clients because I was an expert in, at the time I worked at a programmatic company. But I was an expert in our like third party vendors because one of the clients that I had only used third party vendors. And so I had to learn a lot about third party vendors. And then I became the expert at the company for third party. So if anybody else had a client that was onboarding that was going to use that, they would set up a meeting with me and they would set up a meeting with me and one other dev person. And the two of us would just walk them through. Here's what you need to look for. Here's the things. Here's some exceptions. When you plug into this, it might be a little bit different than me. And if that is the case, like, ask me. I'm happy to dig into the data with you, right? But, you know, there's a space for everyone. And sometimes some companies are willing to make a position for you, right?
Yeah,
so
that's true.
It, especially if they know how strong of a person you are, how much of an initiative taker you are.
Yeah,
it's a lot easier for someone to make that decision of like, hey, I want to carve out a new position for them because they don't want to be a manager, but like, I can really see them leading the charge here.
Yeah.
Great. Let's make that work. Great. So that's probably the biggest thing that I would say from if you're looking to move up. I feel like initiative is just one of those things that I haven't seen a lot of people take. At the same time, from a Gen Z perspective, because my daughter's a Gen Zer, that does not mean to let a company run over you.
So Rose, you know, we're kind of getting to the end of our show. One thing that I want to ask you is, for any young people listening to the show, maybe they just graduated college, maybe they're starting out in the industry, and let's say they really like the strategic side of advertising, right? How can they get started? Where can they go? Maybe who can they meet? And you know, how do they find that first job that, you know, kind of gets their foot in the door?
Yeah, so I'm not going to sugarcoat it at all. Our field is extremely competitive. Schools are always like cranking out these highly skilled future ad leaders. They're always evolving classes to fit today's landscape. I mean, these students are often leaving college with a highly polished portfolios. So if you want to break into the industry and you want to have a specific role in it, you have to have the fortitude to keep trying after countless rejections. Really know your worth at the end of the day. Like, don't set up for a position that you don't want, for pay that you don't want, for a position that you don't want, at a job you don't want. Because at the end of the day, you're not going to like it. You're going to get burnt out. And you're really not going to see all of the benefits that being a part of our community has to offer. If you're interested in getting started in the industry and, more importantly, the strategic side or the ad side of things, opportunities like getting in, like intern for an agency. Internships will provide you with invaluable experiences that, you know, you cannot get anywhere else, and that helps to add to your portfolio. Take an entry-level position, you know, if it happens to be too late to get an internship, say you graduated a year ago, you know, take a beginning position and, you know, work your way up. Learn everything you can. Make friends with people at the agency or in-house across all departments, especially if it's in a department you want to work for. Do freelance work. That's also another amazing opportunity. If you're interested in, say, being a copywriter, graphic designer, or strategist, consider like freelancing to help break into that industry. And those pieces will help expand your portfolio, which will also provide you with like an opportunity to work on a wide range of projects and campaigns, honing your skills. Like one day you could be working on an ad for Rice, and the next day you can be helping people break into the housing market. But if freelancing doesn't interest you, say it is a beast in itself, create fake campaigns. Give yourself a challenge to solve, develop a scope, create an ad. If you're seeing an ad while like you're scrolling or hear something on the radio and think, oh, I could have done a better job, challenge yourself and rework that project with your own take. It could be for a fake company or a company that exists. Creating fake campaigns will provide you with spec work that would help show off your creativity, provide insights into how you solve problems. Introduce yourself to people who have roles that you want. If you're looking to become an ad strategist, look on LinkedIn for people who have those roles at an agency or in-house place you want to work at. Introduce yourself to them. Like, I'm not saying immediately, like, hey, help me get a job at your company. No, don't go call them. They're not going to answer you. Introduce yourself in a friendly and professional tone. Give them a brief bio about who you are, why you're contacting them. If they live close by, like, offer to take them for a cup of coffee and pick their brain. I promise you, most of these people in those positions will want to help out the next generation of leaders. More importantly, make connections and really network in our field. And those connections, especially networking, holds true. If not, it's not just like what you know, but who you know. Like if you're like me, who had no professional community, you have to build your own. And really, you don't want to limit yourself just because you don't have any industry or agency connections. So join an organization like ATU or AAF. Like really get out there and meet people. Yeah. And most importantly, be authentically passionate. Our work does not have like a 9-to-5 limitations. We're not going to clock in and clock out. There's always this like level of education that's going to take place. That way we could keep up with the changing landscape that we discussed earlier. And finally, really build your brand. You yourself are a brand. The way you present yourself to someone matters. That presentation is your brand. And applying the same principles you do to yourself as you would a company will help you get noticed. So doing those things will help distinguish you from the competition and lay a powerful foundation for your future as an ad leader.
Yeah, that's very, very true. If I can just tell a quick, story, I was having lunch with one of my coworkers last week, and she told me that basically the way that she got the job that she has now is because she reached out to our VP of marketing, right? And because they both went to the same college, she liked the stuff that she was putting on LinkedIn. And she just reached out to her and say, you know, I graduated from here. She was at a job that she didn't care for. And just, you know, asked her out to like coffee. And then they got to talking and they got to know each other. And eventually she offered her a job. So, yeah, don't like roast, like you said, right? Don't just go out and tell someone, hey, I need a job. But building those connections, professional connections on LinkedIn, it's never been easier, right? And you never know, like this person might help you find a job at some point, whether they actually offer you one or they're just one of your professional references, right? And their name just happens to carry
weight. Exactly. And they will help you. They will be able to give you insights into like what the job entails, how they got that position that would help you, you know, gain similar experience or look for a position in that same maybe agency or somewhere else.
Yeah, you don't know who they know, and who they know might be hiring.
Exactly. Even if they're
not. And they might be able to hook you up. Rose, that's all the questions that we had. You know, this has been just so much fun to get to talk to you after so long, right? It's nice to have you back on the podcast. We've really missed you, and I hope that you've been able to, you know, keep up with us and you like what we're doing with this podcast that you left for us.
Thanks for having me on the show today. It was definitely a pleasure to be able to share a bit about my story and provide some insights into how to break into the industry itself.
Absolutely. It was just great to get to know more about you, and kind of, I'm sure for our listeners to hear a little more about, like you said, your story, right? Because we all have very different stories of how we got here. And they're all equally valuable, and they all have the equal amount of insights that young people can hear, right? Young people can get something from, right? Anyways, that's all we have. Again, thank you for joining us, Rose, and we hope that you can join us again sometime again, right? And maybe we can do like another follow-up.
Sounds great to me.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Thank you for joining us today. The Add to Houston Amigos podcast is produced at Radio Lounge. Add to Houston is a collaborative collective of young communication professionals aged 32 and under who are looking to make a difference in the industry. If you would like to become an Amigo, join us at add2houston.com. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn at add2houston. Thank you for listening.